We begin this hour with the first broadcast interview of with Clay Johnson. He's the former Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget. And, Clay, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking some time to do it with me today.
Yeah, Francis, glad to oblige.
Are you still in Washington? Have you left town?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. And you
spending more time in Texas, but spending most of my time up here.
Well, glad to have you. What have you been up to since you left on January 20th?
Well, I've got my projects. You know, there's an old adage in Washington that if you want a friend, get a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out and bought myself a new dog, training it. But I've got some projects and some writing I'm doing and talking to some people about some ideas going forward. So I'm plenty busy.
Excellent. The reason I wanted to talk to you originally, a lot of things I'd like to cover today, but I wanted to talk to you about executive experience of the people that you put together in President Bush's team. We'll go back to 2000 and 2001 after the election, and one of the things that people commented a lot about the team that you put together was the high number of people with either with executive experience, especially in government, the amount of governors, the amount of former governors. I believe you had a couple of mayors mixed in there, too, people who knew how to navigate government bureaucracy, for lack of a better word, not exactly what I mean, but I think you kind of know where I'm headed there. What was it about the people with that kind of experience that you and your team thought was so critical?
Well, first of all, when you're picking somebody to be the secretary of something or to run some agency you've never heard of or to be an undersecretary of something, it's very important, and I'll bet President Obama's people are doing this, to define what you want the person to do in the 3 or 4 years or likely to be in that position. And a lot of it might be run the department, might be very operationally oriented, but some of it may be you might have a situation where the department runs well and what they need to do is establish better relationships with Congress or help pass a lot of new legislation or establish a new strategic direction. So the operational part of it can be a priority or it can be not a priority. So it'll vary from department to department at a given point in time. And the other thing is that now the executive leadership can come from the very top person or from the number two person or the number three people. The thing you need to look at is what do you want the person or the top group of people to do and how much of the job is run the agency better, spend the taxpayers' money better. And who in that team has the expertise and the background to be able to do that? Sometimes it's the secretary who brings that. Sometimes it's the deputy or the strong undersecretaries. So it's not necessarily appropriate that the number one person bring that executive leadership capability.
It's interesting that you talk about the deputies and the undersecretaries and so forth, because we're kind of at the point in President Obama's transition where those are the names that we're seeing now. We're pretty much beyond the cabinet secretary level. As you were doing your searches and your background, looking into the backgrounds of people, see what they were experiencing, is that process different, or was it different for your team than it was looking for the cabinet secretaries? Because those were, in many cases, were high-profile names that, you know, everybody in America at least had some familiarity with, where that wasn't necessarily the case with, as you said, the number twos and number threes.
Yeah, well, I think it may be the high-profile. I think it maybe that's an overstatement. I mean, Don Rumsfeld was well-known, but Mel Martinez wasn't, and Elaine Chao certainly had a distinguished career, but I wouldn't say that she was nationally known. And Colin Powell was nationally known. So I wouldn't an overstatement to say that the cabinet secretaries are a different breed of cat. I think the process is the same. You say, what do you want the person to do, or the group of people, or what role do you want someone to play in that top leadership group? It's got to be really driven by what you want the person to get done. It can't be driven by what they've done for you politically. You can't be stupid politically. But if you point somebody that's politically all aces, and they get in there, can't do the job, after about a month or two, that appointment will be looked like a bad one. If you pick somebody who's maybe not as politically, credentialed as somebody else might be, but after a month or two, they're hitting the ball out of the park and doing a great job, then it looks like a great pick. The key is what kind of pick will that person look like a month or two or six into the administration, not on the day you announce them. And I think it's my bet is that the President Obama is doing that and focusing on what you want the person to do. For each position we had a definition, an agreement with the president and the policy people about what we wanted this administration, the Bush administration, to have that person accomplish. And it was probably something different than the last two or three or four presidents would want that person to do, or the next two or three or four presidents, because the challenges change from over time. And then we try to get our people, and everybody has pluses and minuses, make sure that the pluses were in favor of the person having the ability and background to get those things done. But it's driven by the desired result, not by the how people will feel good, how good people will feel on the day that it's announced.
How did you weigh those pluses and minuses? How did you determine that the pluses were significantly better enough than the minuses that it was that person was going to be able to get through?
Well, you talk to people that know something about the department. There are policy people. You have in the president and the vice president somebody who's very knowledgeable about government, and so he was involved in all these personnel decisions. And you have Andy Card, and you have Condie Rice, and you had people who were policy people who had been involved in government before, and so you could talk about the environment and what needed to be done in Congress. And so someone may not have all the credibility with Congress, let's say, that you might want to help get some new legislation passed, but you could say, is it a problem, or it's just not the strength you'd like it to be? We would talk about that. And then if it wasn't a problem, but it just wasn't the strength, then you say, it's important that we get a super strong Ledge Affairs person in there, somebody that is maybe the dean of Ledge Affairs of all the people, the strongest one we can find needs to go in that department. So you would try to shore up potential or non-strengths. Occasionally somebody would have a weakness that you said, the odds are this person is going to be unsuccessful and they're getting done what we want them to get done, and therefore we just consider them for something else but find somebody else for this particular job. It's not a straight math thing. It's a discussion, and it's a judgment call. You're trying to predict how successful someone's going to be at getting done what you want them to get done, and you're looking into their background to see have they faced a similar challenge, albeit at a very different level. They faced a similar challenge like this, and how did they fare? I mean, maybe did somebody work on the city council, or they were chairing some public board or commission, and were all the people that they're serving with are not of their choosing, and can they take no for an answer, and can they do the right thing when it may not be the popular thing, and are they going to be loyal to the president, or are they the hard worker? You look for all those kinds of qualities, and in the end, it's not a lead pipe sense decision. It's a judgment call, but it's an informed judgment call.
It's interesting to hear you frame it that way, because I've seen some commentary over the past month or so about people talking about, isn't there some kind of formula? Isn't there some kind of almost like check marks in the yes column and check marks in the no column, and you add them up? So to hear you say it's a case-by-case basis, I think is real informative.
Yeah. I mean, there are some minimums. One, you pay your taxes, which we all know now. It's the function of where we are at this point in time. I mean, Senator Obama wants to get perhaps something done at the Department of the Agriculture now, which is different now than it was with President Clinton. And yet you have two Democrats, but just the situation in the agriculture world is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really needs to be, at this point in time, for this particular agency, what does this president want to get done based on what he campaigned on and what his priorities are and so forth, and find somebody that can do that. And another key thing is you want somebody who's going to be very comfortable being President Obama's Secretary of X,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the Secretary of X. The people elected one person president. They didn't elect any of these cabinet secretaries, but they elected a president and expect him to pick cabinet secretaries and senior leadership groups that are going to implement and help the president craft and then implement policies that he campaigned on. So you want to make sure that the loyalty is the level is what it needs to be.
We've got to take a quick break, but before we do that, I want to ask you, do you think that gets lost with some folks sometimes?
Do you think the loyalty part?
Well, the idea that they are not the secretary of something,
they're President X's
secretary.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure, they do. And then when they're in there and they're doing a pretty good job, and then OMB starts telling them what they can and can't do, which OMB likes to do, and I'm right there with them. You know, some people don't like that. They don't like to be told that they can't get all the money they want. And so it's a give and take. It's a big place, a complicated place, and there are a lot of chiefs, but there's really only one chief who really counts, and that's the president.
All right. Well, you've talked quite a bit about making sure that people can do what the president wants him or her to do once they get into the office, and you put some measurement metrics in place to do that when you were at OMB. And when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk to you about those measurement metrics, if I can, for a little bit, please.
All right.
Clay Johnson, former Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. My guest is Clay Johnson, former Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget. And, Clay, before the break, we were talking about the metrics that you put in place along with your team at OMB for measuring performance and the websites. And I thought it was interesting during the campaign because President Obama rightfully, I think, talked a lot at the time as candidate Obama about transparency, putting things on the web. But I couldn't help but think, as somebody who follows the federal government, that somebody had kind of gotten a jump on him a little bit. With a lot of the metrics that you put in place and then put online so that people could see exactly what was working and what wasn't at the various agencies. Why was that so important to you? That was something that you personally were pretty forceful about.
Well, I mean, the transparency?
Yeah.
You're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. It actually began before I was at OMB, the first year of the administration. I was in charge of presidents of personnel, and Mitch Daniels and Sean O'Keefe, who were the head of OMB at the time, came up with the idea, and Mark Everson came up with the idea of the management agenda, and let's be very transparent about how agencies are performing. And they said, let's have a scorecard, and green is the desired state, and red is totally unacceptable, and yellow is a defined space in between. And there was some initial concern at the White House that whether or not making this very transparent on a quarterly basis, updating it quarterly, was a good idea. What if it was all red and there wasn't much progress? Wouldn't that be bad? And I think they said, yes, it would be bad, and that's the reason that it won't be bad. That green is hard to achieve, but agencies will be highly motivated to achieve it, in part because of the transparency, and that's exactly the way it played out. Agencies could take pride in what they accomplished, and they could be shamed in what they didn't accomplish. So it was highly motivating. So that focus on transparency was there from 2001 on. And then we took all the part information and made it performance assessment information and made it very public. And one of the reasons Senator Obama was so focused on this was he and Senator Coburn of the Senate were the two co-sponsors of one of the big spending transparency bills that we helped implement, which was the one that brought all the procurement and grant information public. So he voted with his feet and with his co-sponsorship of the legislation that helped make some of that happen. We learned in eighth grade civics class that democracy is supposed to take place in the light of day. And nothing is any truer. It's just transparency moves mountains. It just makes so much happen. And any attempt to manage performance and create accountability has to involve large doses of transparency.
And I would love to maybe in a couple of weeks have you come back and talk about kind of an analysis of where you started and where you ended.
Yeah.
With that transparency effort, where you think it got you during your time at OMB. But I wanted to wrap up today by having you talk about President Obama's creation of the Office of Chief Performance Officer. Talk about what you think will be somebody in that job will be able to accomplish that maybe you didn't get a chance to get to, or you didn't have the mechanisms in place to get to, or maybe the agencies hadn't progressed to a point where they were ready to work with somebody on that level, or anything in that area.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a very good concept. Having a chief performance officer is a good idea, as long as the recognition is that the person who has to make the performance happen is the cabinet secretary. The secretary of X is in charge of X, mm-hmm. not somebody at the White House. But the White House needs to be much more involved than they have been historically at holding cabinet secretaries and whole cabinet departments accountable for doing what they say they're going to do by when they say they're going to do it. And that, my understanding is that's what the chief performance officer was going to do, is going to do. It's the person would technically have the job I had, the deputy director for management, but would have a larger portfolio. And as I understand it, it would hold agencies, be the instrument by which you held agencies accountable for not only doing all this management stuff, which is the ability to be effective, but then also would be an expanded responsibility to hold agencies accountable for implementing their new policies and implementing the economic recovery programs and so forth. So the mechanisms are in place. I mean, the keys to success for holding agencies accountable are well known, which is you have a clear definition of success, you have a clear mutually agreed to plan for getting there, you have clear accountability, not this department or that department is in charge of it, but Joe is responsible for this and Mary is responsible for that. Mm-hmm. And then it's really clear from the head of the department that this is going to happen, that this is important. Then you have lots of transparency to make sure this occurs. And so that's been demonstrated, and the agencies are used to working in that environment. And what I see President Obama saying in the concept with the concept of a chief performance officer is he wants to take that proven combination and expand it to all the things the federal government does that are of note, and build more accountability between the White House and the cabinet departments for doing what we say we're going to do.
Clay, I have a million more questions here, and I've already kept you a lot longer than I promised you I would, so I'll leave it here and say thank you very much for as much time as you spent with me today, and I'll look forward to having you come back.
Yeah, glad to do it.